The Battle of a Lifetime comes alive in 3D. The 3D Battles of World Runner. Welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Joe.
Guys, we have a new party member.
Yeah?
Square Enix. Well, Square for the time being. But like,
Square, is this Square Soft?
There was
somebody else
well,
in the room.
Well, Square right now.
It's just Square.
Yeah, like, you know, like the credit
was.
Card company now?
Right.
Square. You know,
their
like,
other division.
Yeah, yeah, their other division. I you know, it feels right to say Square Enix, though, because like you want
to... Never feels right to say Square Enix.
Well, wow, that's such a weird stance to have.
I don't know. I still think it's Square Soft.
I still think Square Soft sounds better.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you guys are like PS1 players, so yeah. I can understand that the Square and...
Represented.
Enix. Like, I always thought it was Enix growing up as a kid.
I don't think it has a pronunciation.
Okay. It's just Square.
It's silent. It's a silent, silent
Square.
Word.
Yeah, they just call it Square at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It is telling that Square got the front of that. You know, it's not called Enix Squared.
Well, Enix was failing. Anyway.
Well, speaking of failing, that's a great segue into Square.
Yeah.
They're failing at this point in their company. They were founded in 1983. They were trying their hardest to, like, make video games. 83 through 87 are like the dark ages for them.
Yeah. Just like when they started through now.
Yeah, to now. So they're finally trying something that will hopefully be like unique enough to stand out on a system, and that is the 3D Battles of World Runner. Guys, can I get some first impressions that aren't just, wow, this game simulates 3D?
I mean, it's not much more than that. It's really just a gimmick game. Like, you can jump and you can run and then you can fire shots of things.
Kamehameha waves?
Is that what they call them?
No. That's Goku from Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, what is that?
That's the you know,
I know
spirit,
what
you
you're
know.
Talking about.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Okay.
Sorry.
I thought that people, like, the common parlance of the, you know, the fan community of this game called them Kamehameha waves.
Oh, no. Not so.
Anyway, like, yeah, then you fight a giant snake at the end, and the snake's pretty cool. That's about it.
Great. Joe?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I thought was, oh, this controls pretty well for being, like, trying to be 3D, with a big asterisk next to that statement, which I'll get to later. Yeah, it controlled well. It was fine. It didn't blow me away now as a person in 2018, or if you're listening to this in the future, whenever.
Right.
But it probably would have been, like, pretty mind-blowing back then, but...
Especially because, hold on. I'm going to hold off on that thought for a minute and just talk about, like, this is the first game in a while that we've done that isn't necessarily, like, notable, you know, like isn't in the general public's perception
yeah.
of NES video games. So maybe we should just talk a little bit about, like, what you do in this game.
Sure.
So in
I thought I covered that.
What?
You run and you jump.
Yeah. In the 3D Battles of World Runner, I think you play as Jumpin' Jack...
Is that his name? You are trying to save the solar system, though.
They
I know
might
that.
Have just changed it to Jack, but yeah, you play as Jumpin' Jack, I'm going to call him, because pretty much all you do is, to Sean's point, you just jump. Running is kind of like simulated for the most part, but you can control the speed at which you run.
Yeah.
And then there's like, basically like you run on like what looks like a sphere. That's how they simulate the 3D.
Yeah.
And then there's like black holes every now and again, and you got to jump over those. And you got to keep doing that until you get to the end of the level where a boss worm shows up.
Yeah.
And basically that's when the game becomes Space Harrier. If anyone's yeah. played Space Harrier for that was on the Sega arcades and I think is like now available on like all sorts of virtual console and downloads. Sega really likes to continue to pump that game out. But this was like Square's like thing, like that's popular, so let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that, except for the NES mode comes with an added fun bonus of like if you hit the select button, now it's 3D.
Now it's red and blue yeah. glasses 3D. And I thought that I actually like fucked up my game when I first pressed select. And I didn't realize that this was an actual 3D title.
Yeah, it doesn't really like I don't know. it should have said something. Like, it should have been in the options mode or something. To just select on and off the 3D graphics anytime. It's like, when does that become useful? Like, I'm wearing the glasses and I just want to turn them off for a second. I mean, I'm still wearing the glasses.
I think if you don't have the glasses, you keep it off. And then, oh yeah, you're right. I see what you're saying. You should have like the option before you start playing.
Before you start. Yeah. You shouldn't be able to like just change mid-level. Right. I want to be playing in 3D now.
I mean, this game, I feel like I didn't have them, but I feel like it would be easier if you have the faux 3D glasses on, because I had some issues with perspective.
Okay.
I would say.
Let me ask you this, though. Was faux 3D ever good? Like that red and blue 3D? I was never blown away by that, even as a kid.
I mean, nor was I, but okay. I think it might have helped with parallax.
In fact, this is my moment now. This is my moment in the sun to call out to any of our listeners. If anybody knows what game I'm talking about, I'd love for you to link it. It's barely even a game, really, but it was on Windows 95. And
your favorite system.
You wore red and blue glasses in real life, and and in the game, you went through like a dinosaur museum. And the dinosaur, like, there was this T-Rex that could chase you in 3D, and it was terrifying because he'd come out. And the music was ultra creepy. If anybody has that, like, knows what that's called, send it to me, because that would just, like, really break my perception of reality to see that again after all these years.
Maybe you hallucinated that.
That's what I'm saying, though, you know? Like, it's like certain things, you've heard sounds when you're young. You know, and like you never hear them again. And then when you finally hear them, it like reawakens a part of you that you didn't remember. And like that's what this game would do for me.
Wow.
So there's a dinosaur game where you play in 3D on Windows 95.
Blow
you
my
try
mind.
Putting that string together in Google. I've never found any success putting those three terms together. Okay, back to the game.
The game.
3D World Runner. So let's talk about, so you were talking about like difficulty with perception and like telling when the like.
It was never like, oh, I kept dying because I didn't know where the ledge was. It was more just, I can't hit these elevated. Okay, so while you're playing the game, you are also trying to collect stars. I guess, maybe though.
Like, yeah. You don't have to.
You
there's,
don't.
There's absolutely no. I mean, it's points thing. Yeah.
They're there, so you will naturally try to touch them.
Unless you're on the wrong part of the map, because like you can only ever face forward in the map. You can't do like a full 360 turnaround, but you can be on like the wrong side of the map, in the sense that you might never see those stars in an entire level. And I think that's just strange design choice. Like, but they should be weaving in throughout the level.
The stars felt a little to me like I don't know this at all, but I'm thinking they said at the end of development, they were like, wow, this is so empty. Like, we got to put stuff in this game. And they
same
put
thing
stars
with the enemies,
there.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
that's sort of like the coins in Mario. They sort of guide your, I mean, there's no choice in where you're going to go if you're going to take like a low or a high route in this game, but it sort of guides you, you know, it's stuff that's there. But what I meant was, if I'm trying to hit the stars because, you know, shiny object, Pavlovian response, whatever.
Sure.
I could never hit the ones that were floating.
Yes. I agree with that too. Yes. Because also like, it's not necessarily like a maximum peak jump if it's floating. Yeah. It's like, it could be like 3/4 of the way to the ground. Mm-hmm. It's like there's no way to tell how close the ground is. It doesn't really even like cast a shadow.
No.
Yeah. That would have been helpful.
Shadow physics. Get him.
I
don't know.
Okay. I thought you were doing a shout out to the game or something, like calling it out.
I was doing that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I looked into how it was done. You know, and this is the blurb to make it easier for everybody. From the bottom of the screen to the middle of the screen, there are objects placed with decreasing height, say 10 at the bottom and 1 in the middle of the page and everything in between. Every strip object is masked using a mask with the same height as the strip movie clip itself, so 1 through 10. Inside the strip object, the image is placed and scaled, smaller scale for strips with smaller height, to give the appearance of perspective. Now, I made that sound like way more complicated. I didn't make it sound, first off. That's just like a blurb about it. That sounds way more complicated than it is, but essentially it's just scaling height of images from further away based on like an integer count. So it's like, it's constantly just making things look like they're in the distance and then appearing, but realistically,
I mean, it's generally, I mean, we have seen things like this before, like Slalom sort of did this, and so did Mach Rider.
This one feels, it kind of tricks you into thinking like, oh, it's fully 3D because you can go left and right and it's not like a straight path.
Yeah.
But really, You're just running
it's
forward.
It's just an infinite exactly. like scroll thing.
Right. It does make me wish that Slalom and Mach Rider had like those red and blue glass options. You know, like that would have just been that'd neat. Been I'm cool. sure somebody has done a ROM hack for it or something, because I can't imagine it being hard. But someone will correct me on that. So that's how it works. We talked about difficulty. How does it play though for you guys? Like, did you have fun with it?
No, I felt like when I died. It's not that I felt discouraged. I just felt like, do I really want to go again? Like, there wasn't, again, you're not, there isn't much trying to, like, pull you to the end of this except for the prospect of fighting the worm or seeing the new, like, background map. And you have to fight worms a lot. Like, once you get to the later levels, it's just worms. It's worm central. And I don't know, like I never really felt motivation.
I read that as like, this is an early interpretation of the internet that Jumpin' Jack is climbing through and there's a lot of like viruses.
I mean, that would be a more interesting way to see it, but that's not the story.
Yeah, no, that's definitely not the story. Do you know the story?
The story is that some guy, he has a name, I just don't remember it, who is a worm, invades the solar system and he brought all of his worm friends, and at, like, you just fight planet to planet.
Are they planet eaters?
Maybe.
Great. Okay. I'm just trying to figure out what they're doing here. Like,
I think they're just like, I mean, they definitely sent down the little goofball enemies down onto the planet. So yeah, they're invading, and all the planets sort of look like the bonus stages in Sonic.
Yeah,
3 is it?
I think even Sonic. Oh wait, I'm thinking of Sonic like, 1.
Yeah, where you have to collect all the balls.
Yeah, I mean, but don't even say that because I love that bonus level.
Oh,
of
I
Sonic
know.
3.
No, I mean like,
and like,
I'm just saying that that's what the ground looks like.
Yeah, yeah, the ground does look like that. Right. It feels design like Sonic 3 definitely got inspired by that in some way or another. But like, the gameplay loop. If that would have been the gameplay loop, I would have been way more interested because they actually made it into like a puzzle.
I thought that's how it was going to be, but then like when I tried turning, I just sort of strafed to the left, and I could tell there was nothing on the other side. So
can I jump in here real quick on the gameplay? I'm not too hyped on this game, but I think I did have a better time than you, Sean, at first. Because for a while I was like, oh, it controls. Like I said, at first it felt like it controls nice, and the running, the jumping was good. I did initially, like right away, thought like there's not enough to this. But in the second world, I felt like there was a little more to do, and I didn't have right away the idea that like, do I even want to try again? I was still like enjoying it enough to try again, but once I only got to world 3, but once I started really kind of trying to, like, now it was getting a little challenging, and then I was failing, I was like, I don't want to go through all this again to get back to it. And my biggest issue became what I initially took as being very, very fine-tuned controls. I kind of ended up thinking like, wow, these are really touchy controls.
They are, because you can completely, I don't know if you clip through them, but you can miss the stars even when you're like right next to it.
Definitely. And the worst part, I think, is in World 3, there are all these springs you have to jump off of.
Yeah.
And you go over these long chasms, but now in Level 3, there's these chasms where in the middle of the chasm, there's like a spring in one spot, and you have to land exactly on that spring, and the controls are so touchy.
Well, that's what I thought
like
you were going
to
talk about, actually, when you mentioned enjoying the game at first, because, I mean, like, you know, yeah, I'm forced to play this game for the podcast, so I was enjoying it as much as one can when they're playing something that they have to.
For work.
You know, like, yeah.
But it wasn't, a lot of times I pick up a game and I'm like, not a lot of times, but several times so far I've picked up a game and I'm like, wow, this is not fun, but I have to play it.
Exactly.
I didn't feel quite like that. I was like, you know, when I was done, I was like, that was satisfying. I'll never play it again. But
no, and that's what I was getting at. But then, as you mentioned, it gets to a point where, you know, this game demands like a certain kind of precision that almost becomes like memorization, in the sense of like how small the landing zones are for you before you have to jump again. And so you wind up like, if you didn't land right at the beginning edge of that landing strip, you have to immediately jump again.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to like kind of guess, like, was I supposed to do a full A press or like...
Because sometimes like the vanishing point, you don't even see the end of the jump yet.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. that like it escalates like that, because I would say the first two worlds are like fairly enjoyable.
Yeah,
they're relaxed enough,
yeah,
I guess.
Relaxing enough. Yeah. And it's like to the point where it's like, oh, I might consider this game like okay. And then the later levels are just like ridiculous that I don't know. It's something about like difficulty curves in games, and I understand it in these older games. It was like part of the challenge being built into like, how do we make this game like worth this amount of money?
Exactly.
You know, and it's like, well, difficulty curves were turn out to like not be the answer.
Yeah.
So to any publisher that's making games today, it's don't make your games harder, make them like more interesting.
And this difficulty curve to me didn't even really feel like it was intentional. It felt like the idea of what they were doing, jumping across this chasm to the spring that you can see in the distance, it doesn't sound as difficult, but it's just their controls are so exact and so touchy that it's like it's very difficult to actually
makes you wonder
land
if they tested
that spring.
Them.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like this game, and if you've ever been on your phone, or maybe you have an Android phone, or I don't know which phones don't do this, but you lose service, whether you're on the subway or you're just in a dead zone. So in your browser, your browser will just turn into like a T-Rex jumping over. You all have iPhones, don't you?
I do have an iPhone.
Okay. Anybody that has an Android phone knows what I'm talking about.
It's okay.
Wait, is this the Windows game that Mike was talking about? It's on your Android?
You had me with T-Rex. I was like, oh my gosh.
You play basically just a jump over shit game in your browser when you don't have service, and that's basically what this game is. Like, it's got another dimension.
That's
it's so actually got two other dimensions.
Something like that.
But yeah, that's all I see in this game. I don't know.
No, I agree. It's not like we're about to go we're not about to go on like a 30-minute rant about this video game. We're not going to go like in depth and figure it all out. Like, you know, yes, there's like different elements added, and yes, there's like a way to approach it and stuff like that. But like, honestly, if we talk about that here, what fun is left for you at home? You know, just honestly, just boot it up and play it and figure it out. Like, what I think I came away with is that it was a neat idea only on paper by the end of it. Like an idea that almost like wasn't worth actually making, because once you make it, you realize like, oh, this is actually really flawed and we have to wait for better hardware.
I think the saving grace, if it did, I don't know how well it did, but the saving grace would have been the fact that people were like, no, it's 3D. It's like it's so cool. It's like, you know what I mean? And because of the novelty of the running in quote unquote 3D.
I feel like maybe that's going to be the way that maybe there'll be a podcast in the 2040s that looks back on the early VR games, like, and we play like Job Simulator, and it's like, this was considered like the best game for a time, but all you do is like push buttons, and like, yeah, it's cool that you push buttons, but you know,
it's true. No, I definitely agree with that. That's why I personally have not even gotten into the VR world yet, just because it's like, this is first generation stuff. Like, I will wait until they figure out some kinks. Give me something worth purchasing. So, Joe, you had mentioned that you didn't know how the game performed. A spoiler alert: it did not perform well.
No,
Square really needed a hit, and this didn't necessarily help them. So they are met with more trouble, and they're basically on a sinking ship at this point.
They better come out with one final game in the fantasy genre.
Since this is Square, we should talk about who was on the game. First off,
your names.
Square. Well, let me first say this though: Square published the game in Japan, but they didn't have they weren't a big enough company to go and publish it in North America. So actually,
Acclaim,
who I think we all know, they're not still around.
I don't think so.
I don't think they're still around.
They folded.
Kind of funny.
Many years ago.
But they published this game in North America for Square. And on the team for Square, we have Sakaguchi, who is, I think everybody knows him, who's big on Square. He's the Final Fantasy guy, essentially.
Yeah.
The guy people point to for all references of like Final Fantasy's influence and development. Because from Final Fantasy 1 all the way until Final Fantasy 5, he was essentially like the director, and then Final Fantasy VI, he became more of like
a producer.
Yeah, a producer, and he was on Final Fantasy, I think, all the way up to 11.
Yeah, I know he was definitely in 7.
He was on the
10.
He was involved in the PS1 Golden Age.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. 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 He's,
I don't know
he's
why.
Well,
I don't
the
know
producer
how
title has like it's kind of vague. You know, like when you use a producer level, it's like I'm sure that they have like final say on a lot of things, and that is important. You know, like the director kind of has to present to his producers, you know, like these are my ideas. But I don't think like when I see producer in a game, I don't necessarily think like, oh, this is the guy
right.
who made this game. You know, like it's not a big of a deal. Like when I see Miyamoto now as like executive producer in the Mario games, I think it's just more like you present like core ideas to him and he says, yes, run with that. You know, I don't think he's like saying, show me the like the 30th star in the sand level. Like, you know, it's like that doesn't really happen.
I'm actually looking. Oh, no, I see now. Yeah. Hironobu Sakaguchi, yeah. producer, Final Fantasy VII. All right.
Yep. And I think he eventually retired from Square, at least. I don't know if he's out of video gaming in general. His last game came out last year. So I think like he probably still does stuff. He even did like a little movie directing for a while. Like guy's all over the place, but he definitely has talent if you're responsible for directing Final Fantasies 1, 4, playing a role in 6, and then producing 7 through 11. Like I think that's definitely really cool. So that's Sakaguchi in a nutshell. And of course, we'll be talking about him plenty on Nostalgia as Square starts to make hits instead of misses. And then we have Nobu Uematsu, who I think everybody knows as the Final Fantasy music composer. As of this recording, he is not feeling well, but he's still with us.
Oh, he's not feeling well.
He is not feeling well. He has taken a leave of absence until January of 2019. So hopefully everything worked out.
Yeah.
Who knows? This episode might be out in January of 2019. And hopefully everything worked out. But it wasn't like no cancer or anything like that. He was just like under like an illness and just decided to like sit back.
Huh.
Which I think like makes sense. The guy has been
take care of yourself.
Composing music since this game at least. Yeah. And he's still doing it like nonstop.
Talk about like no misses. Like he's pretty much had like all his music, like for all of his games. Does he have a bad, well, all the Final Fantasy games, is there a bad example of the soundtrack?
I could listen to any variation of the Final Fantasy theme, like the actual main theme for the series. I could listen to that in any version and I'm like, that's still like very regal and majestic.
Yeah.
You were going to say something, Sean.
No, just that it was choice.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
What did we think about his music on this game?
I forgot about it already.
Right?
You know, I mentioned this to you guys before we started recording, but at one point I had this weird death animation. I should have died. The death sound, the music went off like I died, but I kept playing. And it sounds like I'm describing a dream I had or something. But I kept playing, but the music had stopped. And it was only at that moment that I realized, like, wow, this music was really repetitive, and it's like kind of nice to have a little silence now.
Right, right.
Because I don't think it was because the
who
track.
Who says that when they're playing a video game? Like, this is really nice to have some silence right now.
Well, I think I don't think the track. I liked the music when I first booted up, but it was just the fact that there's only one song and there's 8 worlds and they're all kind of long. And it's just like after a while, it's like any music's going to get repetitive.
Well, that's the thing.
You know?
I was like, no one's about to critique Nobu because of this album. Yeah, like, right. Well, you know, he really started off with a shaky ground. It's like, no, it's just not a lot to do. Like, right. You know, he wasn't really like doing any world building with this music. Like, it's just music for a game that is a repetitive loop on itself, you know?
Yeah.
So that's all I have to say about that. But interesting now. Now I'm going to get into someone that no one probably knows about unless you're like deep in on retro video games. But Nasir Gebelli, or Gebelli, I don't know if the G is hard or soft. He was the programmer for the game, and he is also the programmer for Final Fantasy 1, 2, and 3, and Secret of Mana. And those are like the games that he's really known for. But when I mean like programmer, I'm talking like he was the main programmer. Born in Iran in 1957, okay, moved to America. And programmed a bunch of stuff for like all those like Apple II computers, IBM computers, like whatever they had, he was programming games for. And Square was like really excited to like work with him. Like a Japanese company excited to work with an Iranian American in these early video game days. I just think that's like so interesting to begin with. And then this guy just having like all of this like knowledge and whoever was the head of Square at the time was basically saying like, we need to make a pseudo 3D game for, you know, to like give us something different for the system. And Nasir knew immediately like what to do and how to do it.
Huh.
And program the entire game. So I think that that's really exciting that he did that. And he actually is still alive today and did a 3-hour long interview about just like all of his programming knowledge from this game, 3D World Runner, all the way unto Secret of Mana. So I think like if you have 3 hours to spend over the course of the next couple of weeks, I would seriously consider listening to this if you're at all interested in programming, because it's very like digestible information. He's not, it's back when programming was simpler too. And so he's not talking like zeros and ones, you know, he's talking like in a way to make you understand how his, basically like his design philosophy.
That is definitely really cool though, because whenever I watch the credits of any game now, it's either a very like anglicized like name or a very Japanese name. And yeah, just to see that international flavor jump out is pretty cool.
Yeah. And of course, you know, like he's going to program some pretty badass games for us down the line. So I think that is exciting. One thing that I didn't talk about with the game, though, that I'm going to bring up because we're talking about the programming now. Did anybody ever like boot up the game and then like it already starts on like a game over screen?
I thought that that was just how it was, because it seems very like it has a very arcade feel. And it sort of just looked like that. That standby state of a lot of arcade cabinets, just
almost like that's the way they get the game over screen to come up, is that it's always there underneath everything.
Right. But I just thought that was like such an odd choice to not have like a menu, really.
Yeah.
Like there's no like, you know, I'm not asking for game A, game B, like the 1985 launch games, but I'm saying like at least give me like a title screen with like some options.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think that you're saying it came up game over and you just had to press something and then you started the game?
And then I started the game.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure. Maybe I just didn't notice.
And this was
pretty
not
sure
every time.
I had a menu. No,
this was not every time.
It was not every time. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Was there a menu?
No, I didn't. I don't think I had a menu.
I think there was it didn't just start right into the game.
No, it doesn't start right into the game, but you have to hit start and then the game like starts up. It's not like here.
Maybe I just wasn't paying enough attention to it, but I just remember there being some sort of screen at the beginning that wasn't a game over screen.
Mike is now going to perform a radio play version of how to start this game. Mike?
No, I definitely will not be doing that. We can move on for a second, though, as I get the definitive answer on that. Did you guys know that there was a sequel for this game?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. And while I mentioned that fun fact, and then I just like leave it, like throw it out there and then take it away. Joe, there is no opening title thing.
There is. So
it starts right on the game over thing.
This makes for a great podcast if I just look at it.
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, wow.
Well, that's amazing. I'm glad I'm here to see that.
The game looked like that?
Yeah, I don't even remember. No, maybe I was just on autopilot to start the game.
There's just something really funny about that like we can't even remember how we started
the goddamn game.
How did we get into the game?
It really sounds like a dream again. You never know how it started.
And then
you
look
there.
Down and you weren't wearing any pants.
So they did get a sequel. I'm going to butcher this, but I think it'd be funny if I gave it a shot. So it's the sequel was called JJ Tobadasi Daisakusen Part 2.
Part 2 is in English?
Part 2 is in English, yeah.
Okay.
And JJ is Jumpin' Jack, obviously.
Oh.
And it was Famicom only, so we won't have to get around to it.
Thank God.
Famicom only. It did still utilize the whole 3D thing with the select button. And interestingly enough, is the last game from Square before Final Fantasy.
Wow, they almost gave up.
Kind of like one last failure before their last attempt. Like, just interesting that they would keep going into that.
This is the series that made them think they were going to fail.
Essentially.
Yeah.
And then, did you guys know that there is an anti-piracy measure put into the game?
Oh.
Oh, what do we got?
Yep. So, essentially, there's like two games are programmed into the game itself, like two different codes.
Okay.
And the way that it works is that if the checksums all come back good as you put the game into like a real NES hardware, it'll load up the option B, which is like the full game.
Okay.
And option A, which is programmed first for a reason, is just this screen with a message that I will read. The message is, I would like to thank you for your interest in my game. Unfortunately, you will not be able to play this illegal copy. But the good news is that you can purchase this game from your computer store. Sincerely, Nasir.
Wow.
It's
very polite.
Yeah, it's a very nice way to go about it.
It is a nice way to go about it. Just to get back into it, that option A thing, though, is there because that's what would load instead if the checksums didn't work out. But the reason why that was done is because if you were copying, and this doesn't happen anymore, but if you were copying from a cartridge to a ROM back in the early days, it would most likely just grab the information from the first set. So it would just
ignore the rest?
Ignore the rest because it thinks that it's grabbed the game essentially. Oh. Like the ROM, it's useless to just grab all data and translate it raw. So it just grabs what it thinks it needs. And so it just yoinks all that illegal information and then just ignores the side B. I'm pretty sure though that this also is only possible in the Famicom Disk System version because that's how you get the side A and side B. Switching the discs.
Yeah,
I don't think that.
Did they switch? You had to switch discs in this game.
No. There's a side up and side down.
It's a four disc game.
Did you not know that? Yeah, for all the Famicom Disk System games, this is a little cool thing. There's a side up and a side down that you do yourself. Like you don't ever you don't ever change out to a disc two. Like take one disc out and put it in another disc. But for all Famicom Disk System games, there will come a point where it will ask you to switch to side B. And it's just a button that you press on the Famicom Disk System.
Interesting.
Yep. Hmm. So that was this. Obviously, though, this one you wouldn't even have to flip the game. They would just do the checksum no to flip the sides.
Huh.
And so that is...
neato.
That is the anti-piracy thing. Jumpin' Jack will return, though. But only in Square's Chocobo Racing.
Oh, dear.
He is the final secret character in Square's Chocobo Racing for PS1, maybe?
I would assume it's PS1.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be my guess.
That sounds like a PS1 game to me.
What a payoff for everyone who put the work in to unlock the final character.
Jumping Jack. Right? Who else would you hope it would be?
Anyone.
anyone else. I think that's just really funny. You almost think maybe it's Sakaguchi himself is the final secret character. And then it's like, no, how about Jumpin' Jack? that's probably the reception in the kid's bedroom as he unlocks that character. It's just dead silence. Like, who? Who is this?
Who that?
Who dat? That also makes me think of, we talked about this a long, long time ago in episode 3 with Clue Clue Land, where Bubbles, which is the name of the main character in Clue Clue Land, is an unlockable character in DK King of Swing. And people are probably just like, what is this?
What is it? In a circle or what?
Yeah, what am I playing?
A circle with eyes.
It is the NES art, too. It's not like they really updated it.
I don't know if you could update that. I think
I'd like to see Bubbles for Smash.
Yeah.
DLC.
It's definitely going to be a ghost? A ghost of another character?
Oh, yeah, Echo.
An Echo.
Come on, the game's out now. You should know that.
Yeah, an Echo of Mega Man.
A Mega Man Echo. We haven't even gotten to Mega Man games yet, but they're coming up.
They're coming.
All right. Anybody have any, okay. Yeah?
Oh, yeah, I have a straight thought.
Yeah, that's what. Well, yeah, you sounded like you were
Everyone knows. So first, I just want to, did you guys read the manual? Did you guys check out the enemy names?
I didn't, love for you to tell me.
Yeah. So there's a couple of that I think are interesting. Like the main circles are called Menacing Meanies. Some of my favorites, I'll just give you. There's a little plant that doesn't look like a Venus flytrap. It looks like a different, I don't remember what they're called, but it's a different plant that eats flies, and it's called the Venus Dye Trap.
Wow.
Yeah.
There are these TVs that are that attack you, and that's called Mean TV. That's my favorite.
What do they call the hands?
The hand is called Mr. Hand. Wait, I'm pretty sure.
Mr. Hand is funny, but also Mean TV is funny just thinking about the idea of that being a real thing, like how you were saying Venus flytraps. Yeah. And it's like you go home, you go to Best Buy, you buy the TV, you set it down. That night, you're in your bed and you're like, oh no, I bought a mean TV. it's coming.
Yeah, Mean TV was my favorite because it's just they just weren't even trying.
Were trying, who knows what that name is in Japanese?
Maybe, yeah, that's true.
Maybe the translation was just incredibly,
the translator wasn't trying.
Yeah.
Also, to correct myself, it's not Mr. Hand, it's Handman.
Handman.
Yeah. They're all Handman.
Handman for Smash.
Oh, yeah.
No, hand, those things were annoying. You fight Handman at the end of Smash.
They think of, like, Handman, and that's, like, so weak, and we just had last week, we had in Legend of Zelda, Wallmaster.
Wallmaster.
Like, you know, like, those floating hands. Those things are intense.
A lot of hands.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, also, that's a better name. Handman or Wallmaster? Right. Give me Wallmaster.
For sure.
Yeah.
And it would actually kind of make sense in this, because these things really wall you. Like, that's what they do. You're running, and they just, they copy you exactly, and they just block your way. Stop. It's very difficult. What?
They're like, hey, stop.
Yeah.
Yep.
I thought you were telling me to stop.
What did they call
repressed memories of Handman for you.
Joe, what did they call the columns in the game?
Kooky columns.
Kooky columns.
I don't know.
I love that you just made that up. But like, Joe, I'm joking. I don't think that would be categorized as an enemy. But there are columns in the game you could just like bump into. Yeah. And I think
but
that's pretty
funny. Columns are like, they give you items. Like, that's what they're there for.
Yeah, I accidentally took a magic mushroom and I died.
Yeah, that's the only bad item I'll give you, too.
Yeah.
I would like to have you take the magic mushroom and then, like, it would just, like, you know, make the screen all wavy.
It's all wiggly.
But then that's, like, really lazy because people have done that so many times with, like, Super Mario Brothers.
Not in 1986, like,
Flash animation.
Seven.
No, like, Super Mario Brothers Flash animation things where it's, like, he eats the mushroom and then he gets high. Get it?
On Newgrounds?
Because weed. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, there was a Rise of the Mushroom Kingdom. Does that mean anything to any listeners? Probably
Rise
not.
Rise of the Mushroom Kingdom.
Rise of the Mushroom Kingdom was a Flash animation series. And I'm just rambling, but in case anybody wants to listen.
This is just all about like games that you loved as a kid.
Well, it was like a Flash animation instead. That was like a 4-part movie that was very well thought out, done by one guy. He also did Mario versus Sonic, the Flash animation. So
yeah,
consider him one of the early, what would you call those? Auteurs of Flash animation. Definitely had a style.
Yeah. You know what? I think this reminds me of 55. That song that was on like Albino Blood. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Let's stop talking about this.
Okay. Yeah. Joe, any other stray thoughts?
Yes, actually.
Yeah, please.
It's the one that everybody's
waiting
for. I like reacting
to your thoughts.
Because towards the end of I don't bring this up a lot, but towards the end of the level, I paused the game. And did you guys pause the game? This
I
one
did.
Actually
I did pause
funny.
The game. I did pause the game, and I knew that you would say something
this,
about
this.
This
isn't,
it's not
this isn't
worth
the pause.
It, bring it up.
This isn't the pause sound.
No, I know. It's
you don't think this is worth it? I thought this is the first time we've had something like this where you pause the game and he turns and faces the camera,
sits down,
crosses his legs, and falls asleep.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a lot
He's
of thought
like,
that they put
hey,
into.
Hey, loser, you're boring me.
It just makes me wonder. If they had taken their focus off of the pause animation, like where could they have diverted that to elsewhere?
And think about all that extra memory that went into programming.
They could have probably put a full game in there.
Yeah, I would have just even liked to see like you know that kind of thought put into the animations of the enemies.
Yeah,
they're just kind of like
they just slide along.
They exist. Yeah, they just exist in this world that I control. Because like you're not really controlling Jump and Jack,
you're
right?
You're controlling the entire planet.
Yeah, exactly. Like I feel like I am the planet trying to help Jump and Jack fend off all of the like almost like I'm causing mini earthquakes that cause him to jump at varying lengths.
Yeah, or you're just dropping away from him. He's not jumping.
I'm pulling out of the solar system. Okay, Joe. Keep it coming.
I think that's my last.
You don't even
thought.
Have like a half baked thought.
You don't think either of those were half baked?
A quarter baked thought.
Sean, I would love to hear a quarter baked thought from you. Give me a quick hot take on this game.
I think that the worms, like it's interesting that if you hit a piece of them, like things that are just like little balls, if you hit a piece of them in the middle, and the middle part disintegrates, it still moves like one worm. Like, why? What's holding the worm together?
That is true.
Yeah, it's the least believable part about this game.
The worms also remind me of, like, the cactus enemy from Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yeah.
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 Yeah,
I know what you're talking
about.
Is it in 3?
I think it's in 3.
Or is it in World?
Well, it's definitely in World.
Okay.
But I think it started
in 3. Maybe
it's
in 3 as well.
Mm-hmm. We'll find out in 500 episodes.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, admission. I almost just ended the show earlier. I like completely forgot that we do a thing called the Essential Games List. I was about to be like,
that's all the time we have.
But no, we have to do the Essential Games List. Okay, guys, Essential Games List time. Give me your votes. And, you know, also tell me your favorite thing about this game. after you give your vote. Sean.
This is different. Okay.
Sean, yeah, well, you know, I'm spicing it up a little.
Yeah, this is spicy. I vote no. This is not essential.
Okay, but your favorite part?
My favorite part of this game was, like, obviously, I don't know.
Okay. Sean had nothing. Sean did not have a favorite part.
If that tells
part.
You something about this game.
Wow. Okay. I like it, though. Would you be able to tell
you
me
know
your...
what? Actually, I do have one.
Okay.
It's at the end. I didn't beat this game, but, you know, like I do, I watch the end.
Like I do.
Yeah. And basically, when you beat this game, there's a screen where, like, Jumpin' Jack is just standing on the right side, no, on the left side of the of like a black screen, and it is very drawn out. Like each of the things, each of the worms that you fight come out, and they all say like one word, and then Jumpin' Jack responds with one word, and then that worm leaves and comes back, and they have another like mini conversation, and all they're saying is just like, help. It's like, what? It's like, code. And like, it just tells you like a code for how to, like, I don't know, like get more lives or something. Like, that's the end. The ending animation is just an endless conversation between Jumping Jack and the worms that he's defeated to give you like a weird code.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is...
I feel like there's like a conspiracy theory there.
Yeah, I like it. I did not beat the game and did not care to looked up the ending video.
I wanted
so
to see the lore.
For,
I wanted to see how it ended.
You got that deep lore, that 3D World Runner deep lore going on. Joe.
I realized a little bit during this episode that, like, a lot of things that I say, and maybe it's just hard on a game, but a lot of things that I say don't really leave the audience on the edge of their seat as to whether or not I'll vote this essential. So you've probably guessed I'm not voting it essential. But my favorite part, besides the pause animation, was probably... I don't know. It was just cool to look back on it when I'm done and saying like, huh, that was interesting. It was funny. It was cool.
You like to reminisce about the game.
Yeah, I like to like realize that it's over. No, I like to when I'm done with the game, I look back. I'm like, huh, that was a fun little different experience, but not fun in the way where I'm ever going to play it again. Fun in the way that it was interesting and
it was
neat.
Understandable.
Yeah, it was neat. That's the perfect word for it.
And I, too, will not be voting this essential because that would be a really weird tower to die on. You know, like two people have already voted it out, and I'm like, guys, I think we should reconsider. All right? Did you see the checkerboard pattern that goes on forever and ever and ever? My favorite part about this game is actually when you run into those columns. I think there's just something funny about, like, you know, being like, not, you know, like, it's just weird that they programmed in some of these animations and then forgot about complete other parts of the game. I also would say that, and this is weird, now all of a sudden I'm going to start loving this game because I'm going to start mentioning all my other favorite parts. I think that, like, we undersold the boss battles.
We didn't talk about them much.
Yeah, because they are like the Space Harrier thing, you know, like pretty much that whole game does this on loop. And so that's a better game, definitely. But I just thought it was like fun to like all of a sudden you're like, now Jack can fly and like move around and he throws out like power beams of his own
but
from
like,
his arms.
Why doesn't he just fly the whole time? If he can fly, why does he have to jump over
shit? He can only
shit?
Fly for so long and he has to save it for the boss because... Otherwise, he would run out of flight power.
All right, fine.
Just made that
I
up,
thought you knew the deep lore.
I know parts of the deep
lore. If you watch past the ending of the code, part of the code is that whole sentence I just said, one word at a time.
Wow.
One letter at a time.
Yeah.
But it's actually so long, the wait time between each letter, that no one's been able to finish it.
Like, but he knows.
No, because like even if you beat the game, it would mathematically take like several hundreds of years.
If you beat the game the day it came out, you still wouldn't
you still
even
haven't
close
gotten
to,
the full message.
Yeah,
my God.
And these are all facts. This is where you come for your facts. Nostalgia.
This is where you come for the facts. Nostalgia. You also come to nostalgia for show notes, links to other people's websites.
Yeah, what was the final vote?
Oh no, three notes. It is not essential. So you also come to nostalgia for show notes, other links to other people's shows, links to video game know-how, Maybe you want to wonder if Shigeru Miyamoto thought much about his launch games.
We're having him as a guest tomorrow. Yeah.
We're having him as a guest tomorrow, but not on an episode.
Yeah.
He's just coming by, stopping by, seeing how we're doing.
Yeah, having tea.
Yeah. Miyamoto's not really a tea guy.
Coffee.
He likes, you know what he likes? Bluegrass.
The music styling.
instead of any sustenance, instead of food or drink,
he's a big bluegrass guy, big music guy in general. Obviously, if that didn't come off in Wii Music, you know, the hit game from 2008 that they butchered an entire E3 press conference over. Definitely go back and watch that. You know what? I'll put that in the show notes. That was rough. Okay, so this is nostalgia, guys. Where would they go for more nostalgia?
NES, TAL, GIA, CAST, CAST.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering why.
.com.
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 Yep.
.com.
No, you don't have to put a DOT in, it's a period. That is where you go to hear about like more of our thoughts. You thought that you just like listening to our thoughts? Imagine like reading them.
Imagine.
Just imagine that.
Imagine all the people reading our thoughts.
If you're blind, unfortunately, that's just not going to be an option.
We do not have a Braille version.
I'm going to have to get someone, I guess, to read the, you know, to speak that.
Well, I mean, you're hearing us now, so it's fine.
Yeah, that's perfect. We don't really, we don't say anything that you wouldn't hear in the podcast. Instead, what we try to do with the reviews on the website is, like, get funky with it. Give you something different, because, like, guys, we're not stupid. Like, we know that everybody out there is doing this. We're doing this for fun. We're doing this to have a good time with you guys. So, like, mostly, like, we're not trying to give, like, the in-depth review and score it out of 10. If there's one thing I hate, it's, like, scoring an NES game out of 10. Like, what would you, you know, like on whose scale? Like, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, right? Like, would you give that an 8 and then be like, okay, but 3D World Runner is kind of like a 5. Like, it would be like a 0.
Everyone's got a different scale. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think the number thing is weird. Yeah,
it's normal.
I think the biggest thing that I want to communicate is that like we don't, at least I'm sure you guys feel the same way, that we don't like think we're experts.
Yeah.
We're coming at this as friends.
The only thing about this show that has remained consistent is how inconsistent we are. When it comes to how we interpret the essential games list, how we interpret like just good games in general, whether we remember things about the game.
But like, if you think we had no idea what we're doing, just think about like the interviews with the developers and what they say in those interviews. They have no idea what they're doing either. No one really knows what they're doing, guys.
Yeah,
so
the manifesto, the thing you should take from this episode is nobody knows what they're doing.
Remember the first time when you figured out that like, oh, your parents don't actually know it all. Like, and they might not even know what's best for you.
True,
you know, like it's those moments where all of a sudden you're like, oh wow, my perception of the world's changed. And it's like, that's what we're trying to do and show you that like Miyamoto didn't really like think like Mario's overalls should be this color for this you know, it's like, no, these things just happen. They
the
get
red
together.
Symbolizes his fiery passion for pipes.
Love it. And that's why the fireballs also come out of the pipes in Mario Brothers.
See?
We are somewhat knowledgeable.
Yeah.
I did pull a Clueland DK Swing reference out of my head. So we can do a little bit here and there.
We love you.
All right. We do love you. Joe?
We love you.
Good night.